Gentlemen, for the benefit of those who have not been here before, we have this lighting system. When the yellow light comes on, that is an indication that you need to bring your argument to a close. You have 2 minutes from that point. These arguments are being recorded. You need to stay near those microphones or we'll miss that argument. And these arguments are, you should keep in mind, available to the public. So whatever you say here is going to be a matter of record and a matter of open to the public. Other thing I would mention to you is rebuttal is for rebuttal only, and we sometimes have lawyers that insert new issues in rebuttal. That's prohibited. Just don't address any point in rebuttal that has not previously been addressed either by you or your opponent. So that we call the first case of the day, and that is United States of America versus Macias. Mr. Lynch.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I am here today on behalf of Robert Macias. The District Court denied Mr. Macias' motion to suppress evidence. In doing so, the District Court erred. The State Trooper undoubtedly had the authority to stop Mr. Macias for failing to wear a seatbelt. But the Trooper improperly prolonged the detention, and when he did so, the detention became in violation of the Fourth Amendment. For that reason, the evidence should have been suppressed. The law in this area is well established.
Counsel, would you speak right into that
microphone? I'm sorry, Your Honor. The law in this area is well established. To make a traffic stop, it has to be justified at its inception, and the actions after the stop have to be reasonably related in scope to the justification for the stop. Once a traffic detention is complete, the driver should be free to go. Now, during the investigation of the traffic infraction, the officer is free to ask relevant questions, to run license checks, to run warrants checks. And that occurred in this case. But the officer continued to detain Macias beyond the issuance of a citation, engaging in a general, unsupported investigatory stop.
All right, and do you have any particular point that you say from there forward the search was unconstitutional?
Yes, I do, Your Honor. The unconstitutionality using the times on the video, and I would urge, well, it's actually a disc, I would urge the court to watch the recording.
Is everything on the video?
Everything is on there. Everything is on there. I invite the court's attention to the recording because I think it's very important. The recording shows you the actual words that are spoken. It shows you the physical positioning. It shows you tones of voice. It shows you attitudes of control and acquiescence. So I invite the court's attention, I think, particularly in light of the Supreme Court's decision a few years ago in Scott versus Harris, when Justice Scalia, writing for the court, said, you know, when we have a video, we are not as required to follow if the narrative of the district court's report doesn't fit the video. And I think if you look at the video, you're going to see a different portrayal of the stop than you get from the district court's order. So I'd invite the court's attention there. And particularly, Judge Jolly, starting at 22 minutes and 15 seconds of the video. That's the time that appears at the bottom. At that second, you hear the car door close, the trooper comes out. He's gotten his license checks, the license are good. He's gotten his history check, there are no warrants out. He has learned that Mr. Macias has been convicted in the past, which he knew. He has learned that Mr. Macias had a couple of arrests, which he didn't know, but they were only arrests. He comes out. He says, he positions himself in front of Mr. Macias. Mr. Macias is on the grass on the side of the highway. The officer comes up in front of him, close to him. He says, I'm going to give you a citation. Here you go. Mr. Macias signs it. The officer stays in the same position, right up close, blocking the road, obstructing, I wouldn't say blocking, but in the way, to the most natural way that you would go to the driver's side. He says...
You're kind of fading off there at the end of your sentences.
I mean, I'm sorry, Your Honor?
You're fading off at the
I'm
end
I'm sorry.
Of your
I will try to stay right here. The trooper says, and you hear the audio, he says, here's the citation. Here's the information on the traffic court judge. He says at the suppression hearing, he then gave Macias back his license. He doesn't say, here's your license. What we do know is he kept the daughter's identification card. You can see him draw back his hand. He keeps the daughter's identification card. Then he says, let me ask you some questions. But he's doing this holding the daughter's identification card. The daughter is the passenger. At this point, he's prolonging the detention. Mr. Macias is not free to leave. He is using the withholding of the identification to establish, reestablish his control over Mr. Macias and reestablish that this is a detention. The district court said, well, Macias got his license back, so everything automatically became consensual. But I think if you look at the recording, you'll say this is not true. He's withholding and he's asking accusatory questions, insinuating criminal behavior for which he doesn't have reasonable suspicion. And he's doing this while withholding the license.
I've often wondered, though, what would have happened, assuming he gave him his license back, and he said, may I ask you some more questions? He says, no, I'm gone. And those officers, you know, usually would say, no, you are not.
Well, this is what...
Well, that's how theoretical and actual that is, that he's free to leave at that point.
Well, I don't think he's free to leave. And I think when you look at the recording that you will see that he's not free to leave from the circumstances, from the positioning, from the withholding of the ID, from the nature of the questions, which in Santiago this court thought was an important fact, that you're accusing him of a crime. So holding the ID, he says, you ever been in any trouble for marijuana possession or for possession? And trouble previously had been defined by the trooper as conviction. You have to tell me about conviction. That's what I mean by trouble. Mr. Macias hadn't been convicted. He says, no. This is why it come up on your license. He says, oh, that. Well, shoot straight with me. Well, you don't have to shoot straight with somebody in a consensual encounter. You don't have to stay. You can leave. That's an assertion of authority. That's showing he's keeping him in detention. Macias says, well, but nothing came of that. There was nothing there. Nothing ever came of it. At this point, the officer, they must have training on Dortch and Jones, gives the other ID back and immediately launches into, well, what am I going to find in that car? You got anything illegal in that car? You got drugs? You got guns? You got weapons? You got money? What am I going to find in that car? And then he asks for consent. And what happens is not a consent. Mr. Macias says, I don't think you got reason. And I'm sorry, I have to look down here. The trooper then says, well, I have a job and you have a shady background, which I think is important because it shows the lack of reasonable suspicion.
I'm not really hearing you too well.
I'm sorry. He says, I have a job and you have a shady background. And I think that shady background comment is instructive because it shows there's not reasonable suspicion there. He's working on a hunch because he doesn't like this guy because this guy went to jail. He went to prison. And that's why he wants to keep after him. That's why he's holding him. So after Macias says, after he says, you have a shady background, he goes, he starts harassing him again, haranguing him again. Who's going to be responsible for what I find in that car? What am I going to find in that car? What's in that car? Who's going to be responsible for it? Macias says, well, I guess I am.
Fast like you're talking now?
Not that fast, but very more commanding than I am. I lack the command of the officer, I would say. But he is not saying it slowly. He's saying, what am I going to find in that car? Who's responsible for what I find in that car? Are you going to be responsible for what I find in that car? Macias says, I don't think there's anything in there. I mean, the other people drive it. You might find something. You might find a roach. Now, what's interesting is during this supposedly consensual encounter at 2448, Mr. Macias goes like this, starts to reach towards his pocket. The officer says, don't put your hand in the pocket. Now, in a consensual encounter, I would think you could put your hand in your pocket if you want it. It's the other person that you're supposedly having a consensual conversation with doesn't get to tell you how to stand. And he didn't say it in a way like, you know, I'd really appreciate it if you wouldn't put your hand in your pocket. He said, don't put your hand in your pocket. Again, showing that this is a detention, showing that he's exercising authority over Mr. Macias. At 2507, a fairly defeated sounding Mr. Macias, who's been asked, where am I going to find it? What am I going to find? He says, look for it.
I meant to capture his defeat.
He says, look for it. At 2510, well, between 7 and 10, you hear the daughter in the car say something, and Mr. Macias turns to her, like, just turns. The officer says, no, pay attention to me. Again, showing that this is a detention, an assertion of authority over Mr. Macias. This is not a consensual encounter. You don't get to say in a consensual encounter, no, pay attention to me, ignore your daughter. This is a detention. It never ended, and it was extended beyond the purpose that justified it. The district court erred. It relied on this court's decision in United States versus Sanchez-Pena, in which, and it said, well, Sanchez-Pena stands for the proposition that once the license goes back, everything is automatically consensual. And that's not what Sanchez-Pena says. Sanchez-Pena, referring to Santiago, says, well, you know, in this case, the officer didn't do what the officer did in Santiago. There was no insinuation of criminal activity. There was made to the defendants. There was no accusation made to the defendants. And the defendant's own evidence, what their testimony at the suppression hearing said, they felt free to leave. And so that anything that happened afterwards was consensual. So the district court was wrong to rely on Sanchez-Pena for the idea that it automatically becomes consensual. The clear evidence shows that it did not become consensual, and we look at all the circumstances. The Supreme Court's told us that in Ohio versus Robinette, which, to go back, Judge Jolly, is one of the reasons why the officers don't say you're free to go, because the Supreme Court says specifically in that case there's no rule that says you're free to go. So they know they don't have to say that, and they don't. So that leaves us with the circumstances, which is what the Supreme Court directed us to. You look at these circumstances, starting at 2215 on, and what I think you see and hear, because I think the tones are important, the tones of control, the tones of acquiescence, are a detention, and a detention that's illegal because the traffic purpose is over, and a detention that results in tainted consent. Now, the district court, in making a finding that the consent was voluntary, said that Mr. Macias's custodial status was voluntary. That's clearly not true on this record. So the district court's wrong about that. The district court said there were no coercive police procedures. I guess if we think of coercive as, you know, actually physically laying hands on, then there weren't. But if you think of coercive as, no, pay attention to me, don't put your hands in your pocket, those are coercive. That's clearly an assertion of authority that says you are going to do what I say about everything, because you can't even put your hands in your pocket during this supposedly consensual encounter. You can't turn towards your daughter during this supposedly consensual encounter. This a significant assertion of coercive authority. The district court also, I think,
were there any improper questioning? At what point did the questions go beyond the mere stop of giving him a traffic ticket or inquiring? I mean, do you think there were any improper questioning that the officer went beyond the necessary questioning, beyond the consent issue?
I do earlier in the stop, Your Honor, but I don't think that they're critical to the decision in this case. What Brigham says, the en banc decision in Brigham, says we can ask questions during running the computer checks, and those questions can be pretty much unlimited. You know, if I want to ask you, where are you going on vacation? Why do you go on vacation? I'm suspicious of that vacation. I could talk to you about that during the computer check. That's pretty clear. Now, what's not as clear, and the officer did not begin the computer checks right away, and Brigham says he doesn't have to, but what's not as clear is whether, if you don't start the computer checks, you get to ask questions that have no relation to the stop. And that happened in this case. The officer's asking him about his work and his health, and he's asking the daughter about why did she leave her two kids in Phoenix? Who'd she leave them with? Why didn't the mother come with him, Mr. Macias, instead? What is the mother's job? Those questions have nothing to do with the traffic stop. Now, and I think that the court should consider that in the circumstances of the case, because you have to consider everything, all of the circumstances. And what those questions show is this was an aggressive traffic stop. It was kind of a fishing expedition from the beginning. But I think in the end, the determinative fact in this case is the court's gone beyond what has been allowed by the Dortch, Jones, Jensen, Santiago cases. In Brigham, the Judge DeMoss's opinion said, well, it appears that what the Brigham court has done is say, we are going to enforce the back end of the Dortch-Jones test pretty firmly and give the officers a little leeway. I think, Judge Prado, that the officer took too much leeway here, but I think the important thing is if we're enforcing the back end of what Dortch and Jones stand for, the officer clearly exceeded that, and that's why this stop has to be reversed. I don't think the court needs to reach the question of were those earlier questions improper. But if the court feels that it does, I certainly do think they were improper. They weren't related to the traffic infraction. But I think that what happened beginning at 2215 and on is enough to show that the Dortch, Jones, Santiago, Jensen line of cases has been violated. And the court should reverse the denial of the motion to suppress and remand for appropriate disposition. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lynch. Mr. Gay, we'll hear from you.
Good morning. May it please the court. One critical aspect of this case that appellant hangs his hat on is whether both identifications had been returned to Mr. Macias prior to obtaining consent. And they want to talk about what the videotape shows, but they ignore the critical last exchange of the suppression hearing where Judge Donnell asked the trooper, okay, I've got a question. Did you hand the defendant the citation and his driver's license and the young lady's ID before you requested permission to search the vehicle? Yes, sir, I did. Their entire case hinges on speculation about what he may be holding in his hand against the live witness testimony that the district court relied upon. This evidence is compelling. It cannot make the factual finding clearly erroneous. It's
but
in the record.
What was in his hand?
What was, yes.
No one knows what was in his hand.
But he was there, wasn't he?
Beg your pardon?
He was there. I mean, he testified at the hearing.
The trooper?
The trooper.
That's right. So he knows what he handed him. He told the judge what he handed
him. Did anybody ask him what it was? He apparently is visible holding something.
No one asked him what he's holding. So against this record where you have a district court relying on the live testimony of a witness that he finds credible, who he asked specifically, this is because if you look at the entire suppression transcript, it's a little unclear what happened. So Judge Janelle, after everything ended, said, I want an answer to this question. And that was the answer. And so basically, this court has long held that it is not going to second guess this sort of factual determination when it's supported by the record under a clearly erroneous standard. It is decided for all practical purposes by the trooper's testimony before the judge. Had this exchange not taken place, I think that maybe we could speculate about what the videotape shows. But here, it's conclusively answered. And so,
counsel, let me ask you, what does the videotape say about the specific question, can I search your car, and the answer of Mr. Macias?
I believe that it's asked in the conditional, can I, it's not an order. And Mr. Macias does say, I don't think you're going to find anything, but ultimately relents and says, sure, go ahead and search. And this is...
So what was it, can I or may I?
I believe it is, can I.
Okay.
Or could I? I think.
Maybe that, does that make a difference?
I don't think it
he
does.
He can do whatever he wants as a cop. May is asking for permission. Can is saying that he can.
Well, I think that we could get into all sorts of semantics about it, but I think that the clear gist of it is he does ask.
And so... Your version, I'll say your version, is quite different from the version of Mr. Lynch.
That's correct, and I think you should look at the videotape. And the main thing...
Did he say, what am I going to find?
Well, you know, yes, he did ask him, and he basically sort of defined the scope of the search. And you have to remember that, and you know, Mr. Lynch refers to the fact he put his hand in his pocket. This is a guy who's been convicted of attempted murder. I think the officer has a reasonable basis for asking someone not to put their hand in their pocket during a stop. He has a reasonable basis to pat Mr. Macias down.
Was that before?
Did he do that?
I believe he pats him down, I believe, right before going to search the vehicle. That's correct. And the main thing, and if you look at the timeline, the entire stop from the time it started till the time he obtained consent was 23 minutes. This court has held, in many cases, stops of greater duration.
How was he asking all of those questions of the passenger about how many children she had and where her mother was and what she did for a living and whether she had a job? And
well, those questions were asked during the initial time period when he had stopped the vehicle, spoken to Mr. Macias, observed his demeanor, his nervousness, his failure to make eye contact. He had not actually placed the vehicle in park. He had to be asked to make sure the vehicle was not moving. And so after he spoke to Mr. Macias, he then went to check the VIN number of the vehicle. He then, as he's going
okay,
to
no,
do...
No, at what point? I thought he asked a lot of questions before he ever got around to checking the VIN number.
Well, I believe that he goes and checks the VIN number and then speaks to the passenger. and asks her a few questions and confirms.
Yeah, but it has nothing is relevant. I mean,
This court has held, and there's some dispute about exactly the limits of this, but that we don't get into all of the things that.
What was he doing asking her about her family and whether she had a job and.
It was related to their story about their itinerary, Your Honor. It was related to finding out exactly what's going on.
How many children she had?
Well, it had to do with part of the. If you look at the questions and response, the story, the narrative that the two were telling. And of course, she confirms, oh yeah, he's been in trouble. So then he goes back and asks, and of course, oh yeah. I do have an attempted murder conviction for which I spent 10 and a half years in prison. I just forgot to mention to you, officer. At that moment, you know, if you're an officer, if you're dealing with somebody under these circumstances, this trooper who has said, I've done many stops before,
What was the point in asking him, have you ever been in trouble?
That's part of the relevant questions that officers ask for their own safety and for determining the sort of.
I mean, for somebody who's not wearing a seatbelt, that's the only offense he had done. He comes in and he checks and he finds out that the driver had his driver's license.
Well.
Had no insurance on the truck. Had no car, no evidence of it.
And I go back to Brigham, Your Honor, where this court specifically said an officer's questions need not even be related to the perfect. Purpose of the traffic stop, since detention, not questioning, is the evil at which Terry's second prong is aimed. Getting mired down, this court has specifically rejected getting mired down by these sorts of questions that officers ask during the intervening period from the time of the stop, basically allowing the officer to get the information and then run the computer checks. Only from the time all of this took place to talk to both passengers, to get the VIN number, all of that. The computer checks were started within 10 minutes. It took another essential 10 minutes for the checks to come back. He issued the citation. He handed Mr. Macias both identifications clearly in the record. And then, almost simultaneously, we're talking within maybe 1 or 2 minutes, he obtains consent. You know, the touchstone of the Fourth
Amendment.
Then
after he obtains consent, doesn't he put them on the. On the vehicle, I mean, with their arms out while he's searching it.
At one point, I believe he does have them. But once he's obtained
consensual.
It's for officer
safety.
I mean,
he's stretching that pretty good.
He keeps them within earshot; they can speak to him. So you know, we can second guess.
He didn't handcuff them. Your argument is he didn't handcuff them, so they. We're free to leave.
Well, and once again, this is a complex determination that the district court made, and it's based upon the testimony at the suppression hearing and viewing the tape, which the court viewed itself during the suppression hearing.
Counsel,
and so there's.
Let me ask you, what was the scope of the search that he asked for permission to conduct?
He asked about drugs and contraband and those sorts of things. I don't believe he mentioned weapons specifically, if I recall.
But I'm not asking what he was looking for. I'm asking what he asked permission to search.
He simply, it was wide open. He simply asked, can I look in the vehicle?
Now, it is my understanding that he ultimately found the gun in a closed luggage of some sort.
I believe it was a bag, Your Honor, behind the seat, if I'm not mistaken. It was some sort of bag. About.
It was not open. It was. He didn't see it.
Oh, that's correct, Your Honor. It was not in plain.
So he had to go inside some sort of a luggage container.
I believe that it was in a bag of some sort, Your Honor.
What do you mean by that, in a bag of some sort?
I have to look at the exact testimony, but I think it was some sort of cloth bag. That the gun was located in.
Nothing in it but the gun, or were there other clothing items in it?
I don't believe there was anything other than the gun in the bag, Your Honor.
Let me ask you, I thought there was a limit on the scope of search of a vehicle that it would not include closed luggage unless he had specifically asked for it.
Well, assuming all of this is based on a consensual search, there are no limits to a consensual search. In fact, the defendant, by remaining silent, acquiesces to the entire scope of the search, no matter what it is.
He was silent. He was over leaning on the car with his hands on the car, outside the car.
Well, many cases, cases from this court have said that as long as the defendant is reasonably close by, and there is testimony that they were in communication with one another, and they do not act to limit the search. For example, there's a case involving, may I look in the car, and the officer opens the hood of the car. The defendant says, oh, no, you exceeded the scope of my consent. This court says, no, you stood there and watched him open the trunk of the car or the hood of the car. So, therefore, it was within the scope. And so, in this case, we're not arguing.
Open the bag, did he?
Beg your pardon?
Did he watch him open the bag?
I'm not sure whether he could see or not. That's really not clear and was not developed in the record. At the end of the day, the touchstone of the Fourth Amendment is reasonableness. And so you also are dealing with a trooper who is making split-second decisions on the side of the road with an individual who has been evasive, has exhibited extreme nervousness, has failed to basically answer truthfully the questions presented. He admits that he might find something in the car. He admits that there may be a roach in there. And that's when the trooper, once he hears the defendant say, oh, yeah, there may be a roach in the ashtray. The trooper then says, well, where am I going to find it? Where am I going to find it? Because the defendant's already given some indication that, in fact, he does know where it is. And so it just strikes me in looking at the district court's order and the testimony before the district court that this was properly decided, that there was nothing unreasonable about the actions of the trooper in this case.
Decided against the government here and decided to reverse the district court's approval of this search, would we remand it or would we just reverse and render?
Well, to the extent that it hinges on some factual narrative that has not been sufficiently developed for this court's satisfaction, I certainly think that a remand to allow the answering of those specific questions that remain perhaps a problem. Obviously, the question of whether it would simply be remanded because at that point the government has the decision of whether it can go forward with its case without the evidence that was obtained. And of course, in most cases, that would be.
But I mean, that's what I'm asking you here. Is there any other evidence other than that was
well,
taken? There is none.
Well, that would be a question that would be answered after the remand and would be handled in the district court. So, but I do believe that in normal circumstances
well,
that
nothing in this record indicate that we should do anything other than reverse and render if we decide in favor of the defendant.
Well, I believe it's actually the indictment would still be in place. This is simply an interlocutory appeal regarding the suppression of evidence, and so it would be remanded to the district court for further proceedings, ultimately, in most cases, a dismissal. But I believe it would be remanded.
Counsel, I have a recollection, maybe wrong, that somewhere in the brief there was a report that the trooper took an hour to search the vehicle. Is that correct?
That is not correct, Your Honor. If you go through
much is shown on the video?
The entire stop is recorded. Now, the clock stops ticking once consent is obtained. In other words, once we're been to a consensual encounter.
Well, I'm not asking you when the clock stops for contents purposes. I'm asking how long did it take the trooper to find the pistol in the bag?
17 minutes after consent was given, according to my notes. 17 minutes is what I show.
There is evidence that the search continued for an hour and 9 minutes.
Well, another trooper arrives. After 17 minutes, the defendant is at that point under arrest, and he is no longer free to leave. He's a felon. He's in possession of a firearm. You know.
Assuming he'd been free to leave before.
Assuming, and that's what the district court found, Your Honor. In sum, I just would like to make sure that we step back and we view this under the rubric of what the Fourth Amendment requires, and that is reasonableness. I know it's easy to second guess a trooper's actions on the side of the road dealing with dangerous criminals, and I know that it's very easy to say, well, why didn't you do this or why didn't you do that? The trooper testifies all of these factors, the nervousness, the evasiveness. Then he finds out drug-related activity, not an arrest. He finds out 10 and a half years in prison for attempted murder. So at these points, the actions that the officers take are as much related to the investigation as it is to an articulable basis for their safety.
If the trooper had come up and said, you hadn't got your seatbelt on, and that's what I'm stopping you for, and let me see your driver's license, okay, I'm going to go back and run a check on it. Goes back, run a check on it, comes back and says, look, you spent 10 and a half years in prison for armed robbery. I want to ask you a few questions. Then you've got a case. But all of us, I mean, he didn't do that. I mean, he asked a lot of irrelevant questions. He detained him with those irrelevant questions until he finally went back and made the check and found that he had.
Well, once again, I think this court's pretty clear that we don't really get into the sorts of questions that are asked while the computer check is running.
I don't know if that's right or not.
Well, Brigham, well...
You find, yeah, I mean...
I understand, Your Honor.
You can find on our cases in terms of search and seizure, and because they're usually so fact-intensive.
That's correct, Your Honor. But at this point, and I think to say that they're unrelated, I think is actually, if you look at them as they unfold and related to the itinerary-type questions that are typically asked, and this Court's consistently said you can ask about the purpose of the trip, the itinerary, where are you going, who's this with. Number one, you have to remember, it's not his...
Ask about their family.
Right. It's not his vehicle, Your Honor.
You have, and whether you are married, and whether, where is your mother, and why didn't she come, and all of that.
Two critical factors I'd like to point the Court's attention to. He does not have proof of insurance for the vehicle he's driving. It's an arrestable offense right there to start off with. Number two, it's not his vehicle. He's claiming he has permission to drive someone else's vehicle. These are relevant questions to find out exactly what are the circumstances. Who did you get this vehicle from? Those are all related, and maybe it was inartful, and maybe it could have been done a different way. But I think you have to really step back and trying to look at everything in isolation is against what everything the Supreme Court has held, that we look at the totality of the circumstances. In any event, Your Honor, I would suggest that in this case the district court did not err in denying the motion to suppress, that there was articulable facts that suggested that something was afoot. The officer,
what are those articulable facts that suggest something of a criminal conduct going on after the stop?
After the stop, the defendant, compared to other traffic stops relating to seatbelt violations, was extremely nervous. He was evasive in answering
how
the questions.
How many times had that trooper done that? Is that in the record?
He's asked several times in compared to other stops. Let's see. What you're saying is you've stopped other people for traffic violations. Yes, sir. People are naturally, when they see cops behind them, the lights turned on, get a little nervous. Yes, sir. Are you saying that Mr. Macias's demeanor seemed a little bit more unusual than the normal traffic stop that you see? Yes, sir. That's an example of experience. There are several other passages where the officer basically says that based on his experience, from your experience as a trooper,
Who is asking these questions?
Beg your pardon? These are on direct examination by the government.
Okay, so he's getting led a little bit by the prosecutor.
Which is perfectly permissible during...
I realize that, but I just wanted to make sure that I was hearing it the way you're reading it.
Well, the transcript is there, Your Honor, and I certainly... I know that y'all will do a thorough review of the record in this case. But getting back to the answer the nervousness, the evasiveness. He doesn't have an insurance card for a vehicle. He's not even driving a vehicle he owns. All of these things naturally heighten a trooper's lawful responsibility to investigate whether this is a stolen vehicle. Why are they going? So you're going this far. You don't have any luggage in the car. You know, these things all point to something amiss based upon what the officer knows compared to other stops. I see that I'm about to run out of time. I really do believe that the district court in this case did have and correctly found that Mr. Macias consented to the search of the vehicle, that the scope of the questions and the scope of the stop, when you look at the entire timeline, it just was not that long. The entire, basically, about 23 minutes for the entire stop to take place before consent was obtained. If there are no further questions, I'll yield back my time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Day. Mr. Lynch, for rebuttal.
I think the most important thing on rebuttal is I'd invite the court's attention to the record at 116 to 120. And what you find there is the trooper saying, first, he didn't give Mr. Macias his license back, and that's on cross. And then he changes his mind and says, no, I did give it back to him. But he very clearly states that he did not give the license back to the daughter. He didn't give the daughter's ID back. And again, if you watch the video, you're going to see it come back at about 2338 or 2339. You're going to see it.
No,
it's a little plastic piece.
The question asked by the judge in this case to the trooper, the last question that was mentioned, was did the trooper say he'd handed everything back?
He did, Your Honor, but he said that in the context of I gave them back one at a time. And what the judge's question was did you ask for consent after you'd handed them both back? And the trooper says yes. And that's entirely consistent with everything we said in our brief and everything I said here this morning. The problem begins after he gives the citation and the info and supposedly Macias' driver's license, and he prolongs the detention. He doesn't give the daughters back. And then he gives the daughters back. I guess the troopers get training on Dortch, too. He gives the ID back and then immediately goes into the, what am I going to find? Can I get consent? So the officer is clearly trying to make it, well, look, I gave them both back. And that's the question Judge Janelle asked. But with all due respect to Judge Janelle, that was the wrong question. The question under Dortch and Jones and Santiago and Jensen, and most importantly under Brigham, where the en banc court said it is, once the purpose of the traffic stop is over and there's not reasonable suspicion, you have to let him go. He didn't let him go. He held on to the ID. He continued aggressive questioning, and you're going to see that when you watch the recording. And that's why I say I think this is mostly determinative of this case is the Dortch Jones. I don't like the questions at the beginning. I think he went beyond what he should be able to ask, even under Brigham, because I don't think these are relevant questions. But I think those are circumstances to be taken into account in determining what was going on at the end of that stop, why it was a continued detention and not, as the district court erroneously found, a consensual encounter.
Counsel, let me ask, does the video show any occasion on which the trooper asked the driver, Macias, why he didn't have his seatbelt on?
I think that what the recording shows is that when he says, about your seatbelt, Mr. Macias says, I know, we stopped at the rest area back there. And it's interesting, at the beginning of the video, when the officer is heading westbound, you see him pass a sign about a rest area. And so Macias had come, I assume, from the other side of that. There's a rest area on the other side of that. He says, we got out at the rest area, and I didn't put it back on. I don't have it on. So there's no question he wasn't wearing a seatbelt. I think the timing, the government always says, well, this wasn't so long. Long is not determinative. In Jensen, the stop was made at 11. The license and warrants cleared at 11:02. And the questioning that was held to be improper detention occurred at 11:04. So time is not determinative. Saying it was only 23 minutes or it was only 25 minutes is not what's determinative. The question is, does the officer have the authority to hold you? And in this case, he did not. After he should have handed over the citations and both IDs and let them go. But instead, with his physical positioning, his retention of the daughter's ID, his aggressive, insinuating questioning, he was extending the detention. And I think that's clear under this court's authority. Precedent. One other thing I'd like to say about his nervousness. The officer was asked, and he kept saying extreme nervousness. He must have said it about three or four times during the hearing. But one interesting thing is he was asked on direct, I think, about at record 84, was his nervousness about the same out of the car? And again, I would invite the court to watch the recording. Mr. Macias isn't that nervous. He stands there for the whole 20 minutes, gets hand behind his back, he scuffs his feet, he goes like this. He doesn't look nervous. And more importantly, we have the trooper saying, oh, wait, what eye contact? Mr. Macias, I think you'll see on the recording, he's looking like this. We can't tell from the angle it's shot at where exactly his eyes are, but his face is in a position of someone who's making eye contact. So again, when you have a video record like this, the narrative has to fit what actually occurs there, not simply what someone says in a testimony, even if they're credited, if it doesn't fit. I would say it's not a matter of necessarily credibility. You have to find it too pretty incredible, but you have to look at the video and say, this doesn't fit with what we're seeing with our own eyes. And reasonable suspicion under Ornelas is a decision for legal determiner, this court. And we'd ask you to reverse. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lynch.